Coming up on the show, I'll have surfer Chris talking about everything from smoking cigars, surfing, and sobriety. Hello and welcome to another fabulous episode of Stuck in the Attic podcast. Today I have a good friend of mine who grew up down in Virginia Beach, a beautiful place to grow up, a surf community, and his name is Chris. Let's get right to it. Let's ask him about his experience, strength, and hope. What's up, Chris?
Hey, how's it going, man? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, wonderful. I really was trying to get you before, but you know, with schedule conflict and all this stuff, and now with the quarantine, now it's lightening up a little bit, and we are 6 feet away from each other. So I really wanted to hear about your experience, you know, and your strength and your hope for the future. So, you know, let's get right to it. What was it like growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up in a little bit outside of Virginia Beach, but pretty much in Virginia Beach. The beach community, grew up on a surfboard when I was a kid. I have mom and dad, they were both doctors growing up, and I have a younger sister. She was a year younger than me. And life for me was typical in ways and very different. On the outside, you know, there was a facade of like a beautiful life. Yeah, parents, you know, hardworking, pillars of the community, everyone knew them, you know, but behind closed doors is very different for me. My parents were very abusive growing up. My mom, very emotionally, verbally abusive to me. I was telling my girlfriend the other day, like, I have a good relationship with them now, and my mom actually says, "I love you," after she talks to me on the phone, which is weird, because I hadn't heard that ever when I was a kid. You know, and my dad was very physically abusive. A lot of beatings, some trips to the hospital with some broken bones and stuff like that. You know, so childhood was pretty rough for me growing up. I used surfing as an outlet. You know, I would disappear as much as I could, lived on the beach, hung out with friends. I was really only in the house when I had to be, you know, cause I was terrified of my house growing up. My parents grew up fighting with each other. It was constant chaos in my house. No real drugs or alcohol going on, but it was just a very, very aggressive household. You know, and I just grew up not wanting to be part of it. You know, I wanted to be part of something else, anything else that got me out of that house. You know, so when I got into middle school, you know, I started hanging out with kids that I probably shouldn't have. You know, started smoking cigarettes and drinking at 13. Started smoking weed at like 14. And, you know, quickly escalated from there. You know, when I was in high school, I was able to kind of maintain things. I love playing sports. I was a big soccer player, and I wanted to get into a college on a soccer scholarship, you know, so I would party and then, you know, hold off and be able to function. Cause sports was another way I got out of my house.
Of course.
You know, I didn't want to be there. You know, so growing up, that was what growing up was like for me. And I did get accepted into college, James Madison University down in Virginia. I got to play soccer for them.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, Division I soccer I got to play. Yeah. And, you know, I was really excited. So I went off to college. That's when things really spiraled out of control for me. My first semester there, I failed out of school. Started really partying. Started doing a lot harder drugs. You know, a lot of cocaine, a lot of LSD, mushrooms, pretty much anything I could get my hands on. So, you know, that's where things really progressed for me. I failed out of school freshman year. I think I had like a 0.2 GPA or something like that. It was like the sad. I think I went to two classes the entire freshman year. They let me get into summer school. As soon as I was 18, I left my house for good. I never went back.
Okay.
So I was living in college, kind of hanging out, went to summer school, got admitted back in. And then, sophomore year, the first week of school, got arrested for selling weed out of my dorm. So that was my first brush with the law, and, they kicked me out of school for good. So I, you know, told my parents I was in school so they'd keep sending money. And I lived at school and sold drugs. and I hung out with kids that were in school.
They didn't kick you out of the dorm, huh?
No, they did. They kicked me out of the dorm and the college, so I started living off campus.
Okay.
In an apartment.
Nearby?
All
right.
Yeah. So I hung out with all my friends that were in school, and they were functioning addicts and alcoholics. They were going to class and doing well, and I was living off campus selling drugs. You know, and that's when things really took off for me. Started selling a lot, using a lot, and it was a mess. Like, that 3 or 4 years until my friends graduated school was a complete blur to me. I don't remember a lot of it.
Yeah.
Did a lot of things I should have been arrested and put in jail for a long time, and just kept dodging bullet after bullet after bullet. And then finally, my parents found out I wasn't in school after like 3 years of living there, and they were kind of sending me money for food and stuff. And I would like actually make fake grades and send it home to them with the like school address on the letter and stuff.
Letterhead,
so they
keep
sending it to me. So they
your
keep...
boy's doing great. What a pleasure.
Yeah. So then they finally found out and cut me off for good, which was, you know, at that point I had money. You know, I'd spent a couple years of making good money selling drugs, and yeah. I was okay. You know, I didn't really need them. And then I remember I met my ex-wife in college, and her senior year was when things really got bad for me. She graduated and moved back to Jersey, and I really started just using constantly. It was all day, every day, staying up for days on benders, you know, not sleeping, not eating, just like I was a mess. And so then when she moved back home, I ended up moving up to Jersey because I was getting kicked out of my house down in Virginia. You know, I couldn't pay rent, couldn't pay anything. So her family let me move up here with her. And they're from Bergen County. So I moved in with them, kept doing what I do. Eventually we got married, and she was right there with me through all the drug use.
It's rough.
Things got bad when it got really bad was when I had to go get back surgery. I was probably living up here like 2 years.
Let me guess, painkillers.
Yeah, that's when I started getting into painkillers, which quickly, you know, turned into doing like 30 oxycodones a day at some point, at like the height of it. Took all of the money we had. We had a house at that point. We got married, had a house. We had a kid. I have a 9-year-old daughter. So she was real young at this point, and we ended up having to sell our house, and because we couldn't afford it. You know, we went through, I remember getting an inheritance from my grandparents, who were very wealthy, of like $100,000 while we were living in that house, and it was gone in months, all the painkillers. So that's when I first started trying to get sober. I went into I did like an outpatient thing. I wasn't serious about it. My ex-wife at that point, you know, my parents came, found out what was going on, and threatened to take our kid, tried to go through the courts to take our daughter from us. So we signed custody of her over to my ex-in-laws, and my wife got clean, and I just kept doing what I did. Mm. So my ex-wife moved back in with her family.
I didn't know that about your ex-wife. Yeah. That she was okay. She was like a running mate for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, so then you had no real drive to get sober.
No.
Why would you?
No.
Because the other half is.
And it's funny too, because at this point I had managed to go back to school during all this.
Yeah.
Graduated college with an English degree. Graduated at the top of my class up here at William Patterson. Got a teaching job in Wayne. Was teacher of the year my second year in Wayne, and I was using painkillers and doing drugs all through that. So I was still at the stage of being able to semi-manage it.
Functional.
Yeah, functioning. Then, you know, things got bad. You know, my ex-wife moved back in with her parents, and I just started running. Started smoking crack a lot,
mm-hmm.
and that's what really brought me down to my knees. I finally checked into one of three rehabs, came out, was sober for about 4 or 5 months, started using again. And it was just the cycle. That was a very repetitive cycle for me. I would be clean for a little while and then start using again.
Did you drink while you were doing it?
Oh, yeah.
Because I found out, because I was I was pretty heavy into the devil's dandruff, and I found out that I could drink even more when I was doing coke.
Oh yeah.
So it was like twofold. Now I'm like dually addicted. It's not just like one drug.
No.
You know, like you take a couple painkillers, you're like, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need any other drugs.
Right.
But cocaine is like, you can drink even more.
Yeah, and it's like, then you can do more coke, and then you can drink more, and then you can
it's
do more
cycle
coke.
Of...
And you can't get enough of it. It's just putting it in and in and in and in. So after the first rehab, stayed clean for about 5 months, went back out, and I was teaching. So I had to take another leave of absence from teaching, go into rehab again, all on the town of Wayne's dollar. And while I was in there, when I came out, I stayed clean for a little bit and then started using again. So that's when we went through a divorce. My ex-wife and I weren't compatible with each other. We were disastrous for each other. You know, if you put all the drugs and alcohol aside, we fought all the time. We weren't happy. I really feel like we kind of got married out of convenience because we were both heavy users at the time.
It's funny how that happens.
Who else would want to be with us? Yeah. Let's start a family kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how that went. My daughter obviously was living with my ex-wife because she was clean and her parents. And I came out of my second rehab, and somewhere in there, it was probably like my sixth or seventh year teaching is when I met my girlfriend now, Dana, after I'd gone through the divorce. I stayed clean for a good chunk, like 3 years at that point. Met Dana, work was going better. We started dating. And then, you know, I was living in an apartment by myself down near my daughter. And I just remember it was like a Saturday morning. I woke up. I had gotten through the steps up to like 8 or 9. And then I was like, I don't need this. I have 3 years. Like, well, there's no reason for this anymore.
Happens.
Yeah, I don't need to go to meetings. Yep. I need more time with my daughter.
You get complacent.
Yeah.
You enjoy the finer things in life.
Yeah. Like, I had everything back, you know? So I decided I didn't need AA or recovery anymore. I was good. I was cured. And I remember waking up on a Saturday. I remember this. It was Saturday morning. I remember looking outside of my apartment. It was nice out. And I was like, I'm going to go buy crack. And I woke up. Got dressed, went down to Patterson, and that was that. I was off running again. And this one was bad. You know, I ran for a while. I moved up here with Dana, and she didn't know. She thought I was still sober of 4 years. Mm. And I'd been using it at my apartment before I came up here, and I couldn't pay my apartment anymore because I was using, so that I came up here with her. Masked it as, we should move in together. It will save us both money. You know, and manipulated her.
Yeah.
As
you do when you're, in the throes of addiction.
Right.
It's like narcissism at its finest.
Oh, it is.
You know?
Yeah. I'll take advantage of anybody.
Yeah.
And
yourself.
I'll justify it. Yep. You know, I'll say, well, this is a no-brainer. We should do this because it helps us both out.
It's the lying to yourself that starts it. Because then once you lie to yourself, you're disrespecting yourself, right?
Yeah.
Why not? Why would I treat anyone else differently?
Yeah. And I mean, when I'm using, like when I'm not using, I'm a great person to be around. But when I'm using, I will do anything I have to do to you to get what I need from you. I'll rob, I'll steal from you, I'll hurt you, I'll threaten you, I'll use violence if I have to. I don't care.
You're going to meet that goal.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah, it's all about me, you know? And so I was living up here with her, and she started noticing things. I was tired all the time, I was sick all the time, you know, this and that. She started telling me that there were weird smells in her house because, I was hiding like a crack pipe and stuff in her bathroom. And I was like, no, there's nothing going on. You know, I'm still sober. And I remember one day I drove my daughter. She was up here visiting us. And I drove her down to school and went into Patterson to pick up crack and got arrested on the way out. Dana had to come get me. I lied to her about what happened. I said other people were in the car with me, and it was theirs. It wasn't mine. Yada yada yada.
That old gag.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, she's not familiar with that life, you know. So she bought it hook, line, and sinker. And then 2 weeks later, I got arrested again, and she had to pick me up again. It was right before Christmas Eve. and I got arrested. My daughter was going to be up here for Christmas. Dana's son was going to be up here. And I remember the state trooper pulling me over and took me to the station, and I begged him. I said, my girlfriend's going to pick me up. Please just tell her, like, tell her it was, you know, a prescription issue, that I had a prescription that I didn't have, like, a bottle that was marked. Don't tell her what it was. Yeah. And he did. He told her. So Dana just thought it was a prescription, like, misunderstanding. And I came home again. Then two to three weeks later, I got arrested again, right down in the same spot. And at that point, I got released. You know, I called up Dana and I said, listen, this is what's going on. You know, I was crying. And
that's rough coming clean like that.
Yeah,
man. It takes a lot, especially when you're in addiction, because that's anti-addictive behavior.
Yeah, it was hard. And, you know, she had to kick me out. You know, her kids involved, you know, and then it's, you know, she doesn't need to put up with that. So I went into a hotel down in Wayne, and then went into a rehab. And when I came out that time, I was down in Florida for 6 or 7 months.
So that's where you went, Florida?
Yeah.
How was it? I know a lot of people, I never went, but I know a lot of people did.
You know, it was all right. It was, the rehab itself was good.
Yeah.
But when you come out, it's crazy down there.
I heard that there's a lot of, like, these halfway houses where they're not really, I don't know, how would you say it? They're not really looked after, you know?
Well, that's how it was. I was in a halfway house.
They turned to, like, drug dens.
Yeah, it was a drug den. It was, if you had insurance, you could get into another halfway house, so why worry about staying in this one? You know, it was like a revolving door.
Yeah.
And so I ended up coming back home. I had court cases up here for my 3 arrests. So I came back home. I flew here, stayed with Dana, and then I never went back. I said, you know, we talked while I was here. I'd been clean about 6-7 months, and she let me move back in with her. And I came back home, went to court. One of the arrests was a DUI. Lost my license. So I was working for a landscaping guy in Vernon, and still not going to meetings. Still not didn't have a sponsor. I just jumped back into work. I was working like 50 hours a week. That's all I needed.
That became your...
Yeah. And then Christmas, that lasted from... I came home in June. By the next beginning of January, we had Christmas. And then I think January 1st, I went into New York City and bought meth, which I've never done before. I have no idea why I decided to do that, but some reason I decided to do that. Dispersed in between there, I had been abusing ADHD medication because I have a psychiatrist that will give me whatever I want.
Okay.
So I ended up buying meth, came home, you know, quickly she realized something was wrong again and kicked me out again. I was living at the Appalachian Hotel right down the road here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Place is shady looking,
oh,
man.
Oh, my God. You know, I was living there. It was the rough place. And I went on like a 4-5-6 day bender and didn't sleep. And in that span of time, I had a car that I finally got my license back after my first DUI suspension, bought a car cash, 13 grand, nice Acura TSX. And within that week, I had totaled my car in the parking lot of the hotel, got my second DUI, and then the Vernon police found me wandering in someone's field in the middle of the night. I was just walking through their field. I had all my clothes and everything with me. I don't remember any of this. Wandering a field. And they sent me to the hospital because when they found me, I was having a heart attack.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was having a heart attack. And
did you know it?
No, I had no idea.
Wow, you must have been juiced up on something.
So it was meth, man. That's what it was. So they took me to Newton General, and I was there apparently 3 or 4 days. Dana visited me there. I don't remember any of my time there. I like the only thing I remember is the printout of what happened from the doctor. Apparently after 3 or 4 days, I signed myself out because I said, you know, they had me on suicide watch. Yep. I said, you can't keep me after 3 or 4 days. I know that rule, like you can't keep me. And I signed myself out to go use again. Dana picked me up picked me up in the hospital crying, took me to a hotel. And the way she says it, she's like, I thought I was driving you to your death, like you were going to die.
Isn't it amazing how when we are using, we all of a sudden become fucking walking attorneys? We know all the laws.
Oh, yeah.
We know you can't do this. And yep. That's like if I was a cop, let me tell you something. If I was a cop and somebody came up to me, or, you know, not came up to me, but if I pulled somebody over and they started spitting out all that shit and they look shady, you know right away they're covering something up. Yeah. No one tries that hard. Like if you got nothing wrong, you're like, all right, whatever, here's my license. All right, have a good day. See you later.
Right.
You know? Yep. But it's amazing. When I you can't keep me. I know my rights.
Yeah.
You know?
And apparently that's how I was in the hospital. I don't remember it. Dana said when she visited me those days, I looked like I was dying. Like, I looked like death. And I have a picture.
Yeah, you were.
I have a picture of what I looked like during that time, and it's rough. And so I signed myself out. I had to sign this waiver that I still have today that the doctors are saying, if you leave, there's a high possibility you're going to die. You had a major heart attack. We need to do surgery. If you use, you will die. And I signed my name at the bottom and left the hospital. And she drove me to a hotel. I called up an Uber because I had no license. Mm-hmm. I was going into the city again. And I crashed in the hotel. I hadn't slept in days, so I fell asleep, and I missed the Uber. I woke up to banging on my door. They had called a welfare check on me.
Yeah.
And there were cops there. They ran warrants. I had a warrant, so they arrested me. I spent some time in Passaic County Jail after that. And then that was January 4th, 2019, and I've been sober since.
God bless you.
Yeah. That's
a rough ride, man.
Yeah, I went jail, came out, went into a sober house, went into an Oxford house. I'm working on step 11 today with my sponsor. I have my daughter back in my life. I have my girlfriend back in my life. I just moved back in with her up here after a good solid year. She was finally okay with me moving back in. And you know what? I am all about recovery, man. Like I've for the first time, I can honestly say, like, I want to stay sober. And I don't have this thought in the back of my mind where maybe I could give it another shot. You know, let me get clean for a little while, and maybe I can go one more time. You know, this last time put me through the ringer. I mean, I'm lucky that it's come out of it.
And I'm right across the street, so if you need to get something off your chest, come over here and tell me, you're an asshole. All right, fine. You feel better now? Yes, I do. Thank you. I don't feel like I have to do anything stupid.
I appreciate that.
That's great, dude.
I mean, I talk to my sponsor daily. Every morning I reach out to people texting.
I know. I get it every morning.
I have enjoy to, it. You know, because these are all things I never did before.
I try and beat you, by the way, sometimes. And I'm like, I got him. Yes.
And I you know what? I told myself that I have to really, you know, if I use again, there is I more so now than ever, I'm pretty sure I'm going to die. You know, I never felt like that before. I never had like a multiple arrests really, and was in jail and had a heart attack. Like none of that had ever happened.
You get to a point where I got to the same thing. I identify a lot with your story where you get like a very short span of time where monumental things occur that are really fucking bad.
Like all hell breaks loose.
All hell breaks loose. And you're like, I don't know. I can't sustain this. Yeah. I mean, before when I was using or drinking or drugging, I had a little bit of fun sometimes, but now it's like I'm getting myself into a corner that I can't get out of.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you feel like that, you're like, I think it's really time to like give life a try.
Yeah. I mean, I remember waking up essentially because I was coming out of that bender and in Passaic County Jail, which is a nightmare. Like that place is terrifying.
That's in Patterson, right?
Right in Patterson, all gangs. Like I was like the only white kid in the cell. And the first, when you're there for the first like 4 or 5 days, you're in the basement with like 50 other people in one room.
Yeah.
And it's
like in the movies.
It's terrifying, dude. One toilet, one sink, 50 people fighting for, like I had to fight for my bedroll. Someone tried to take it in the middle of the night. I got in fight after fight. It was like survival, man, fighting for survival. And I told myself, I remember crying on the phone to my girlfriend, crying to my daughter when I was in there. And I told myself, if I ever get out of here, I'm going to do everything I have to do to never be back here again. And I have a year and 4 months now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's amazing, like, what you have to put yourself through to just see that there's a different way of living.
I know.
That's so much better.
Yeah, man. It's just being able to wake up and, like, go for a bike ride and like do normal life things that everyone else has been doing their whole life. Like, I'm so grateful for that.
Like, you go down the shore. I go down the shore and I went to the seashell down on Long Beach Island last summer. And I was seeing Connie at the time. And we went to the concert there. It was the Nerds that were playing, and people were drinking. And I'm like, you know, most of these people that are drinking here will be able to put that drink down, have one or two, and go about their normal lives.
Yeah.
If they only knew that when I used to go to functions like this, this was the low point of my use.
Yeah.
I would tone it down just so I wouldn't look like a complete monster nutcase, you know, out of my mind. Like, I'm only going to have like six drinks here.
Right.
Here comes Steve, double fisted, you know, and it's like all these middle aged people watching like an older band having a good time. And I'm like, whoa, I'm toning it down.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wait until you see what I got to stick up my nose when I get back to the room.
I was talking to someone about that this morning. They were it was like a little funny meme thing about happy hour. And and I was like, I told them, I said, that's, you know, this would never work for me, because happy hour for me turned into multiple trips to Patterson all day, staying up for days.
It was happy week. It wasn't happy hour.
Yeah. As soon as I put anything in me, that's where it goes. Like, I usually end up arrested, now in hospitals, you know, like, bad things are going to happen. It's never have a couple drinks and go home and relax. Yeah. Like, that's impossible.
You know, this is the first podcast that I've really felt super relaxed, and that we're sitting down outside on a deck in nature, as you can hear all the things in the background, and we're just enjoying a cigar. It's like nothing better.
I know.
And you know, this is like just one of my pleasures. It's just like being outside, and it doesn't always have to be a cigar, but you know, it helps. and having a casual conversation about, you know, experiencing like the worst things you could possibly think of, you know, and just ripping your soul out on a daily basis, it takes a lot out of you. It takes, I wouldn't say it takes strength, but it takes so much energy in the wrong way, you know, bad energy.
Yeah.
You know, and then you live in that bad energy, and you're constantly living in pain. Even the good times, it's a fake smile.
Yeah, and you always, I used to, towards like the, when it got real bad in college up until I got sober, I always just hated who I was, you know? Even when I was having fun, I knew I shouldn't be doing what I was doing. And those fleeting, like, moments of fun were always, there was always a shit show waiting for me afterwards.
It was always a back door that was terrible.
Yeah. Like, and it became where it wasn't even fun anymore. It was a chore. It was a task. It was something that had to be done, you know? I've done a lot of bad things in that time, you know, like a lot of robbing people and violence and things that I'm, you know, I would never do, ever, you know. And it's crazy because for a long time I lived that life where I was a teacher, but then I would like leave on my lunch break and go into Patterson and come back to teaching. I used to teach middle school kids, and I would be fucked up the whole time, you know, and it's terrifying. If I have, you know, I think of my daughter with a teacher who's using like that, that's terrifies me.
You know? Obviously, you were doing something right. A little silver lining to that story is you got Teacher of the Year, right?
Yeah.
So you had to be doing something
that
right.
That was at the beginning. The beginning
was,
of teaching.
That was the first week. It was the first week. I got Teacher of the Week, not year.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I can't believe I kept my job.
Yeah. You know? It's crazy. I mean, and at the end, you know, I ended up losing my teaching license. You know, once the arrests happened, I lost my teaching license.
Yeah, that starts to pile on.
They don't like teachers who are two-time felons teaching kids in school.
No. I don't think you can get a teaching job.
No. But now, right now, I'm in drug court, though, and I'm on, I just got moved to phase three.
So they can scale that back a little bit?
Yeah, so I have phase three and phase four left. I've gone through one and two. After phase four, my record gets expunged.
Oh, okay, there you go.
So then I can get my teaching license back.
You might be the best teacher in the world.
Yeah, I can't wait.
You know what? Because you're that guy who experienced life.
Yeah. And
came out the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the end goal, man.
Kids will never know.
Yeah, I know. It was funny. When I was living at the Oxford House down in Wayne, because that's where I taught in Wayne, I was walking back from the gym one day, and this car, the car drives by me, and then I see it turn around down the road. I was like, oh, no. Like, I figured it was someone I robbed or something somewhere. And they pulled up, and it's two of my students, and they were like, Mr. Byer! And I was like, hey, what's up, guys? And then they're in there smoking a blunt, and they're like, you want to hit this? I was like, no, I don't do that.
Oh, I've gotten that on the ski lift right here. People are like, hey, you mind if we smoke? And I'm like, not at all.
Yeah, right.
It's not illegal if I breathe.
Yeah. So secondhand smoke. I can't help it.
What am I going to do? And I'm like, no, thanks. There was a time, and then kids are probably sitting there like, oh, brother, here's an old timer. And I don't even finish. I'm just like, yeah.
Old timer, though, feels good, man. It feels good to be an old timer.
You know, back in my day, we used to walk uphill.
Yeah.
And the drug dealer used to live in an igloo.
Yeah. Because it was always snowing. Snow.
Through the snow, just to get a little joint. It's amazing. So. Let's get into, so now you're sober, your life is good. Where did surfing fall into this? Because I know you're a surfer, and I know I'm going to try and surf, and hopefully
you'll
help
me. Yeah, we're going to go this summer, man.
Yeah. What did surfing do? Because I found stuff after I got sober, but you use stuff while you're sober.
So surfing was always like a peaceful thing for me.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, it was a way to get out of my house.
Uh-huh.
I fell in love with it, and it's one of those things that I loved, and then I quickly put on the back burner because of use,
It's you and nature, dude.
It sucks. Like, the things you love the most, you just don't care about them anymore.
I know.
And
you lose focus.
Yeah. You do, because your focus is so narrowed on that one thing, but I love it, man. It's like the most peaceful thing. When I would go down to the beach for a week, I'm the guy who will wake up at like 5 a.m. and get out there so I'd be the only one out there. And there's something about sitting on a surfboard in the ocean with waves and no one out there. It's like heaven.
It's like skiing.
It's heaven.
You versus nature.
Yeah.
That's all it is. You're closer to God that way.
I agree, man. And I feel like just sitting there, sitting out in the ocean I would do it every day if I could.
Well, hopefully this summer.
Definitely this summer.
I think I think the beaches are opening now.
I think so.
But no one's going to go in the water. You got to be insane to go in the water now.
Yeah.
No. Well, unless you have a wetsuit on.
But we're going to go.
Yeah, definitely. I look forward to it. And I got friends down in Long Beach Island, too. So.
Yeah, it's where my grandparents had a house.
Oh, yeah. I love that place.
Beach Haven.
Yeah. Beach Haven. Yeah. I think 13th by Hands was where my parents had the house.
Nice.
That closed down, Hands, after I grew up going there.
Really?
They were a rinky-dink store. They sold, Coppertone and some beach chairs.
I used to go in there when I was a kid.
And they had, like, these little plastic sandcastles. They never really had anything, like, great. And that store across the street, I think, ruined it. The store down by Fantasy Island, the A&B's.
A&B's,
Yeah. That place has everything under the sun, and I think that kind of ruined Hands, customer, base, because it just, they had better stuff, and prices were still good, and they had a lot more clothing. Hands didn't really have clothing that I remember. It's been so long since I went in there.
Yeah, some of my fondest memories when I was a kid was I would go to my grandparents' beach house for a week and a half in the summer.
Yeah.
So I'd be away from my family, because I hated that. And I would just be at LBI. I went surfing with my cousin every day.
Sunglass Menagerie right across the street. Yeah,
loved it, man. Yeah, their place is right by, Tony's, that Italian restaurant? Right on the main road.
How long has it been
there? There's like a liquor store right across the street.
Wait,
from
that's
it.
Not that place that floods all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the street they live on.
Okay, really?
Yeah, right on the bay.
Man, that place used to flood all the time.
All the time.
For no reason.
I have
no rain.
I have a picture of me and my cousin in a rowboat going down that street.
Yeah, that's like the lowest street in the island, I think.
Yeah,
it's gotta
be.
Do you know how many times the water, the bay and the ocean met?
Yeah.
It's you're like right on the edge there with that place.
It's
crazy, so great, but like one bad storm and everyone's like, get the hell off the island.
Yeah, you can't go anywhere.
No.
Yeah, but man, I can't wait to get back to surfing, something I've missed. I'm back to riding my bike all the time, my mountain bike. I ride it every day. I love mountain biking.
I never got into that.
Oh, I love it.
Up here, it's big.
Yeah, it's nice.
You know, speaking of surfing, I did the episode on Andy Irons, in December.
Nice.
And that is some story, man. You know, it's funny because they say that, alcoholics and addicts, we have such a drive because of our addictive personality that once we turn our focus to something positive, we almost become addicted to that.
Yeah.
So I have to teach myself moderation.
Yeah.
Even in sobriety. Like, yeah, you don't think it'll hurt you, but it doesn't hurt you directly. Your mind changes focus to something. My mind constantly is changing focus.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like I definitely identify with that. You know, I can, if I get interested in something, I'm like 0 to 100 with it. You know, I'm like full blown into it. That's all I want to do. I look at things online about it. I want to buy stuff about it. You know, it's like I have to learn moderation as well. Like, you know, I don't have to put all my focus on one thing. There's plenty, I can disperse it. You know what I mean? Like I can do a couple of things halfway, then just do one thing full blown and push all my other responsibilities aside.
You almost have to teach yourself how to be a human being.
I know.
Once you put everything down.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wait a minute, I can focus on more than one thing in life.
Right.
And that's why I just focus on like being outside, going to the gym, rock climbing when I'm not tearing my elbows up, you know, and skiing in the winter and hopefully, you know, well, surfing this summer. Like, I'm all in it, man. Just give me something that my body can release endorphins while I'm doing adrenaline.
And I feel like that's a big part of, you know, recovery too.
That's that physical part that I always talk about. You need that.
You have to have
it. A lot of people just sit around.
No. If I just sit around, then bad things happen. You know, and that's one thing I've learned too is that I
spiritual, emotional, and physical.
Getting sober too is like learning how to live for the first time. You know, because I find a lot of my tendencies are like 13-year-old kid tendencies. You know, because that's when I started using and that's when I started drinking, and it's weird that because I feel like with a lot of addicts and alcoholics, it's you missed all of that life where you learned how to grow up. You know, because we were doing everything else.
I was doing blow on school nights at 15 years old, dude.
I know.
Who the hell does that?
Who does that? You know,
like piles.
I remember hanging out with friends, and they would be like, listen, we've been up for 2 days. Let's sleep. And I'd be like, what are you talking about?
Sleep,
like, what?
Sleep when you're dead.
Yeah, what are you doing? Cowboy movie. And then it got to the point where they didn't, I mean, drug addicts didn't even want to hang out with me. Because I was like a whole different level.
Okay, I have a story in that. The kid I used to run with, my like best friend growing up. He turns to me and he goes, dude, I think you need like rehab or something. While we're doing coke, we are already in, not like we just started and I went first. Yeah. We're like trading off and he just looks at me and he's like, you know, completely out of his gourd. And he's like, dude, you got a serious problem. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's fucking great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's just like, make them bigger.
Yeah, you know? And that's the thing. It's like when people like that are pointing things out to us, like, how do we not see it?
Dude, I remember that.
Yeah.
As fucked up as I was, I remember that because it was such an aha moment. And I'm just like, I don't give a shit. Like, I just like, yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm just going to keep going as long as I have money in my pocket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This.
I had my best friend in life, this kid I met in school and partied with a lot in college.
Yeah.
He lives in Brooklyn. And I remember when he moved up here, I would go into Brooklyn to stay with him. It would be 3 days of staying up and it would be a nightmare. And it got to the point where he wouldn't even let me come visit him anymore.
Dude, I did that in Berlin.
Yeah, he wouldn't let me come.
I ruined the friendship like that.
Yeah, I did too. I haven't talked to him in years. Because he was like, every time you come, there's lots of drugs. We never just chill and fighting happens. This happens. Like, you can't come here anymore.
Dude, I went all the way to Germany, to the west end of Berlin, Charlottenburg, right by the palace there. And I went on like a week long bender on a semi vacation. And the kid's like, you know, my buddy's like, dude, what the hell are you doing, man? And here I am sleeping in his little girl's room when she comes on a weekend. Yeah. And she wasn't there that, you know, that weekend or week, whatever it was. I don't even remember. And I just remember it was snowing. And like every day the freaking plow was like 4 a.m. And I'm just basically like starting to fall asleep and a plow comes through. I'm like,
no.
And I'm like, well, I ain't sleeping tonight either.
Yeah. I remember that vividly, you know, those nights of staying up and then trying to go to sleep and you hear the birds chirping and you're like, fuck.
Now you hear a bird chirping, you're like,
yeah, you're like,
oh, life.
I can get up. Oh, it's nice out.
Jesus. Yes. It's beautiful out. Let's go make the best of the day before it was like, shut up, birds. If I had a BB gun.
Or I need darker curtains. This is bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I need a steel gate to come down over my windows like they do in, like, you know, for the stores.
I know.
It's really great. Like,
it is, man.
It, you know, the biggest test for me was the ability to get through life's bullshit.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like on a daily basis, because let's be honest, I have my life. I don't look at stuff the same way I used to. I don't look at stuff as a problem anymore. I look at stuff as just another part of life that you either get through or you don't get through. You know, and I'm not always great at it. That's why I have people like you that text me in the morning, which I appreciate so much. You have no idea. And I have, you know, this great program of recovery, and I pray every day. Get down on my knees every single morning. I pray, and you know, it may not do much, but you know, it's discipline.
Yeah,
it's a reminder of where I came from and what I am today. And then, what do I do if I feel like shit? I go out and I help another, you know, a sick and suffering alcoholic, drug addict. You know, and I got that page going, and that's doing good. And I got this podcast is like, a lot of people really enjoy it.
I love it, man. It's amazing.
It's great because
I love listening to people on it.
I have the best people in the world come on here.
Yeah.
You couldn't find better people to come on here, including yourself.
Yeah, thank you.
Because you, not only did you share your story, and we're having a great time doing it, you know, outside smoking cigars, but people listen to this, and you might say one thing, you know, just one thing, and someone might click. And I always said, if I start this podcast and I can help one sick and suffering person out there find something that they can latch onto to better their life, dude, it's all worth it.
Yeah, and you know, a big thing for me this time around was getting to a place of forgiveness with my parents. That was the number one cause of multiple relapses for me. I would stay sober, and that resentment would brew, and then I would be like, I didn't have a good childhood, everyone else did, screw it, you know, I'm not worthy of this thing called recovery. And it's crazy, because I have a really good relationship with my parents now, and it took a long time for that to happen. But you know what? It started when when I had that heart attack, Dana called my parents. I hadn't talked to them in 7 years.
Wow.
Dana reached out to them. She had never met him or talked to them.
Okay.
She called him. She said, your son's probably going to die. I thought you should know this is what's happening. And, you know, they were right there. When I was in jail, they helped me get out. They helped me get a lawyer.
Isn't that funny how things turn around?
Yeah, and we rebuilt our relationship.
That's great, dude.
I talk to them every day.
That's awesome.
Every morning I text them and say, have a great day. And then at night, like last night, I talked to my mom for like 20 minutes. And when she gets off the phone, she says, I love you. You know, and we never used to say that to each other. You know, and they're back in my daughter's life. They saw her for the first time in 7 years. She's 9 now, about 4 months ago.
Sometimes it takes a really, really bad situation in life to show you that your family is the most important.
Yeah, and for me, it was a big part of it was, listen, I'm expecting people to think I can change. I'm not the same person. I have to afford them the same chance.
And look what happened.
You know? And they're not living the way they used to live, you know? And who am I?
And it's because of you.
Right.
That happened.
Yeah.
And you have to give yourself some credit.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's beautiful, man. I can't ask for much more. You know, I woke up today. It was beautiful outside. Went and played with my girlfriend's son. We went on a walk, and now I'm here smoking cigars.
Yeah.
Later, I get to do my step 11 with my sponsor.
I got to go on Zoom later on. That's another thing that's really great.
I love Zoom.
It's 24 hours a day.
I love it. I hope it stays, because for me,
I think it will.
I don't have a license for another year. You know.
I think it will.
For me,
Saturday nights we'll go down to Ridgewood.
For me, that's a big deal because I hit a meeting every night now.
Well, I'll take you to one on Monday nights.
It'd be awesome.
The one.
Yeah, and you know what? Another beautiful thing. I have one of my good friends I lived in the Oxford house with. He has 4 years, but he's never done any kind of program of recovery. He just has 4 years clean.
No step work, nothing?
Nothing. And
rough.
So I started talking to him, and now he's doing step work with my sponsor. And he loves it. He's like,
saved his life. And
he's like, I had no idea life could be this much better. You know, I was like, yeah, you're just holding on. You're bare knuckling it, man.
Well, you know what the hardest part is? Taking a look at yourself.
Yeah.
It's taking a look at yourself, and then it's forgiving yourself. The hardest thing for me to do, because I'm very hard on myself.
Forgiveness.
Is forgiving myself. Yeah. I'm very hard on myself. I don't know why, but I am. It is what it is. And people point it out to me. And after enough people point it out to me, I'm like, you know, I think I am. You know, and it's for us, it's having a purpose in life. For me, when I go through tough times, it's the shaking of faith and the questioning of whether I have like what my purpose is. everyone has that. You know, mankind, we always question our purpose. But I think that for me, when I got my head out of my ass and I got sober, now I had to feel like there was some purpose to it all. Almost like, it was weird, almost like it wasn't enough just to save my life. I felt that there was something bigger than me.
Yeah.
And that grounded me. Yeah. And I try not to think about that purpose question as in black and white. You know, someone said to me, your purpose might be doing exactly what we're doing right now.
Right.
You might be helping someone, you know.
Yeah.
You might be reaching out to someone. On Instagram, I have some people message me. I say congratulations when they get an anniversary, and somebody's like, dude, you helped me. And we talked. And I'm like, okay, you think I helped you. You helped me by reaching out to me.
Yeah.
And letting me share what I was taught and what I learned from other people that looked happier than I did. And that's how it works. It's like you can't just hand it off, dude.
You can't keep it if you don't give it away, man.
You just hand it off down the line. I'm very happy. You want to be happy too? Yeah, how are you happy? Let me tell you.
Yeah.
This is great. I get to do something. I feel better. And you get something out of it, hopefully, you know?
Yeah.
But I got a tremendous, out of this podcast, I got a tremendous feeling of gratitude for my own sobriety just talking to you, you know, because I see it's great because this is one aspect of life, getting sober, where you never really finish. So when you talk to someone that is sober for a day, for 10 years, regardless of how much time I have, I'm just, you know, one day away from pulling that trigger and going back to the life. And I could feel it sometimes tugging at me. And I'm like, not today, Satan. Not going to happen, buddy.
I know.
This is where I have to stay humble. And sometimes when I go into, you know, beginners, I hear someone that's got like 10 days. And I'm like, I feel that way too sometimes.
Yeah.
I feel that pain you're going through still.
Absolutely.
And almost I'm grateful that I do feel that I have the ability to tap into that pain, because I don't want to ever forget.
No, and I think being able to feel that pain keeps you grounded, you know, because I remember that when I had clean time, you know, a little over 3 years and went back out, I had forgotten about that pain. I forgot all about it.
And that's the worst thing you could do to
yourself. You know, and then I pulled myself out of meetings, and so I wasn't hearing it anymore, you know? And very quickly, you forget all about that, then it shows up and kicks your ass all over again.
Because your personality, your ego.
Yeah. Thinking you got this. The second I think I have this is it's bad news.
I'm glad I don't think that way.
Yeah.
And that's another thing with when it comes to us. We put ourselves into a state of mind that we're complete narcissists and egomaniacs when we were using. How do you turn that off when you get clean, when you get sober in recovery? How do you turn that off to where you stay humble and you stay teachable? Because the minute I feel like I go back to that, I got this selfish mode, I feel it, that pain tugging at me again. I'm like, I can't, this is not good, man.
Yeah.
Complacency is not something we can afford.
No, not at all.
We gotta stay on our toes.
I think a big part of it too is just staying spiritually fit. You know, that's something I never really worked on in the past, but reminding myself of all those principles, the spiritual principles that you have to, like, you have to live by that. You have to live that way, you know? The second I start dictating to people how they should be acting and taking control of situations and trying to manipulate things into happening the way I want them to happen, that's just my addiction, you know, my addict mentality acting out all over again.
It is. You can't control anything.
No.
And that is such a hard thing for me to comprehend.
You know, but it's a beautiful thing too, though, because now when things are about to happen, you know, being able to say, listen, I've done all I can and now it's out of my control, there's like such a peacefulness to that.
It is. You know what I realized? That when I actually apologize nowadays, I mean it, and I make a proper amends to people to never do it again. And not being right is like freeing, because it makes you feel so like normal and grounded.
Human, man.
Human, yeah. You know? Before, you're always trying to justify something that you knew was unjustifiable.
Yeah.
And like, now it's like, I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember, you know, even in situations where I knew I was wrong, I was going to manipulate it and try to convince you I'm right. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't have to do that anymore. Now I have like a 10-step where I can sit there at night, look at my day, figure out what I did wrong and how I can fix it.
The only time that you, the opposite person, not you in particular, but when I was using, when you were right, was when I got what I wanted.
Yeah.
Then you were right.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
You can be right then. You know what? I'm a complete asshole. Yeah, you were completely right.
Yeah.
How much do you have in your pocket?
Yeah, right.
You want to be friends?
Right.
Of course. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yep. I just remember it's just a big con, man. Like, you're a con artist when you're in addiction. You are just the typical con artist. I'm going to convince you of what I need to convince you of to get what I want, and then I'm going to throw you aside.
And the whole time, you don't even realize that you're conning yourself more than anyone else.
Yeah, I know.
Because those people will get hurt and live their life, and you're just fucking miserable.
Yeah.
And you're like, I got over.
I got him.
And he's like, all right, I'll just get back in my car while you walk home to your basement apartment that you barely are holding on to, you know? And it's like, oh, yeah, right.
I'm going to go back to my nice house and my family that loves me while you have no one.
And you don't see that because it's like you got happy for like 18 minutes. Some dogs walking by. Maybe Duke will get up and bark at him. I don't know where he is. Well, I think it's been over 50 minutes what a great conversation, dude. Thanks for coming in.
It was awesome, man. Thank you for having me. I'm glad we could do this.
I'm going to, this is going up right away, and you can listen to it on Apple and podcasts, Spotify and Google Cast, and a plethora of other sites that I don't even have in my brain right now, but you can check them out through my Anchor website. And I'll see you guys again soon.
Nice.